This is the Angry Admins podcast for November 20th, 2006. This is episode number 4. I am Ryan Necessary.
And I'm Joe Bibby.
How's everybody doing? This is the podcast devoted to technology, info culture, and the business of tech. We're coming to you from Houston, Texas. It's getting cold outside. This is the week of Thanksgiving. We have a couple days left before our vacation starts. I guess this week there is a lot of small things, you know, nothing gigantic. Joe, go ahead and tell us about what you found out on the new Ethernet stuff.
So today, one of the stories that caught my eye was Ethernet speeds. Right now, you know, we're seeing in the office, gigabit is probably about the max anybody ever uses. But on backhauls, they've been running at about 10 gigabit as of about last year. And at a show this week, Ethernet was tested, proven at 100 gigabit. Now, the way they did this, it wasn't exactly standard Ethernet. They actually broke it up into 10 different 10 gigabit streams. And that made it so it could actually do 100 gigabit across multiple links, basically, is what it did. Kind of like a striping type item, which, you know, it's important for things to be continue to be pushed ahead as video starts to ramp up online and more people are streaming video, downloading video. Our current backhauls really just aren't going to be able to keep up. So it's important to see this kind of thing moving along, and I'm glad to see it.
Now, is this mostly just been demonstrated in a lab environment, or?
Well, they I mean, sort of a lab. It's hard to do this kind of large scale thing in a lab, but they did it over a 4,000 kilometer fiber network. So it's only over fiber. It's not over like Cat 6 or anything like that. But it was over a real network. So.
Well, that's cool. I'll tell you one thing that I saw, and this came out midweek last week, so just after the last podcast. We had a story. The link I'm looking at is on Fox News, but it was covered by all the major wires. Source Media Incorporated, a former employee, was charged with hacking into his former company 3 years after he was dismissed. And this guy was... he was the one-time director of IT, and then I think later he was the VP of technology before he left. But basically, he's been charged with hacking into his former company and then warning employees that are still there that, you know, their jobs are in jeopardy or whatever. This guy, his name is Hoffaker. I think it was Steve. Yeah, Stephen Hoffaker. He faces up to 5 years in prison on the charge, and he was arrested on last Wednesday in New York. So they said while he was there at the company that he had access to, you know, user accounts and passwords and things like that. And I'm not sure how accurate it is about him, you know, quote unquote hacking into his former company, because, I mean, you know how things go. You know, there's a lot of places where, you know, people's former user accounts don't ever get locked out. So was this a case of, you know, his laptop was configured to get into his email and they just never changed his password? You know, was it really, you know, quote unquote hacking? You know, I'm not sure, but they're claiming that it was, you know, unauthorized entry and access of a computer system, which is, you know, pretty much the commonly used definition for, you know, unlawful hacking into a computer. The company's saying that it was $100,000 in damages because they had to, you know, route all this employee stuff through other, you know, legal firms. And, you know, that's pretty much how they trump up the charge, is they say, well, you know, for hackers, you know, it's not that, you know, you stole something from us, but you cost us a lot of time and resources. So, you know, they want to be compensated for that. But apparently this guy was just trying to tip off some folks that work there that, you know, hey, maybe your department's in trouble or whatever. So he accessed their email system and sent, you know, emails, I guess, internally. Why didn't he just send emails from the outside? I'm not sure, but, you know, he may have sent emails as other employees or whatever. But yeah, that was news midweek last week.
Yeah, it's an interesting story. I mean, it doesn't really makes sense to me how it could have cost them a lot of money. Like you were saying, if all I did was break in and send some emails, that's not going to cost them a lot of money. It seems like they're just kind of angry that he let them know, and, you know, why didn't he send it from outside? Maybe he didn't want to be tracked. It's kind of unclear. But it is interesting to think about, you know, you have users who are leaving the company. They have privileged accounts, you know. You got to make sure you turn that off before they leave, or right when they leave. Otherwise, you know, if they're upset about being fired and or they have information they want to share with other employees, you need to get that cut off right away, or they couldn't come back to bite you, which looks like that's what happened here.
Yeah. Well, it says the messages were sent from a Yahoo account. So, I mean, it's not clear. I mean, it may be that, you know, he was into their email and he read emails that looked like some people are going to get canned, and then after he read it, then he came back and from the outside emailed the people and warned them. So, you know, maybe that's how they know that, you know, hey, you were in our system. But I don't know. Interesting stuff.
So another story that caught my eye this week was a story about it was on Lifehacker, which I peruse pretty much daily through my reader, my feed reader. And they had a story about these what they're calling Google Tech Talks. If you go to Google's video service, google.com/video, and do a search for Tech Talks, all one word, you'll come up with all these hour-long talks that Google has recorded. Looks like they have guests come in and talk to employees, and they recorded them all. It goes in-depth. They have some really interesting stories on here. You know, to give you an idea of what Google Tech Talks is, at the intro of all their videos, they have this little quote: Google Tech Talks are designed to disseminate a wide spectrum of views on topics including current affairs, science, medicine, engineering, business, humanities, law, entertainment, and the arts. So it's called Tech Talks, but it's not necessarily just on tech. I mean, it's probably related to tech in some way. It is Google, but it's nice to, you know, they really are spreading themselves out and trying to get into other areas, and this is one way it seems like they're doing it.
So these were presentations given on the Google campus to employees?
That's right, that's right. You know, it's a real casual environment. Nobody's dressed up. It looks like it's just a cheap little video camera set up in the back recording. You know, they field questions during it. And like I said, they're around an average of an hour long. I mean, discussing anything from developing JavaScript to using Xero configuration with Bonjour, which is the Mac product, Mac OS Automator. There's one called the Graphing Calculator Story, which I haven't looked at yet, but looks interesting. So, you know, it's something entertaining. If you're on your lunch break, you've got nothing to do, pull one of these up and watch it while you're at work, or watch it at home at night. It seems like there's a very limited amount of in-depth tech coverage online. Most of it's kind of surfacey, covering the news.
Right.
So it's good to see some in-depth stuff that's free that anybody can use.
Well, you know what's really, I mean, it looks like there's quite a few, too, out there.
Yeah, it goes on for pages and pages. I got to page 17 and kind of stopped looking, and that's it. I think there's like 12 per page, so.
You know, it's such an interesting company. I mean, you know, say what you want about Google, but it's pretty cool that they're into so many things. You know, and I'm sure that they have, you know, out of all the talent that they have there, that, you know, they're looking at, you know, pretty much modern culture from like so many angles, you know, as far as like marketing and, you know, networking and, you know, how to spread information virally and, you know, through traditional means and, you know, just having theorists and all sorts of, you know, people from diverse backgrounds all working together. You know, it's just, it must be like a really crazy place to work.
Yeah. And you know, this really just shows Google's attitude about participating in the tech culture. You know, you look at someone like Microsoft, who they do some contribution that lets people tap into their resources. But Google, I mean, almost every product they have, there's an API that you can tap into it with and use it for your own uses. They don't charge for it. And, I mean, theoretically, you could make money off of some of those products. And these videos, I mean, you could post them right to your blog. It's using Google Video. It's just amazing how much they're willing to share things that they've spent lots of money on. But they get it because the more people it's shared with, the more people come back and use it, and the more they get throughput and they get ads clicked.
Right, right. That's very cool. It just seems like they're just really the perfect example of a company that represents, you know, the post, you know, the after, you know, 2000 era of companies. It's like, well, what do you guys do? It's like, it's more like, what don't we do?
Right.
You know, they have hooks into everything. And I mean, sure, they're a search engine, but mean, they're just, that's what they are on the surface. So yeah, there was another story that popped up on Dig that I saw. There's a guy named John Peck, and on his blog, he posted an entry about how to configure an $80 file server in 45 minutes. So basically he found like an old computer, like a 700 megahertz Celeron with 128 RAM and a small like 10 gig hard drive. He found this thing for like, you know, $40 or $50 or whatever. So he grabbed it and then he did a LAMP install, which is the Linux, Apache web server, MySQL, and PHP. And so basically he put together a little Linux box that he could just hook to his home network that he accesses through OpenSSH. And he, you know, has his web server on there, and he can use this, you know, just to dump files or, you know, as a storage for his network. So to do this for $80 is pretty significant because, like a lot of the off-the-shelf NAS solutions out there, like the Buffalo Terra Server and the Ready NAS and all those guys, I know the Terra Station is still like right at $700-$800.
Yeah, I think so.
How much were those Ready NAS that we had?
Oh, those were like almost $2,000. Right. Now that was a terabyte of storage, but
right. Well, those were nice too because they did NFS and stuff like that also.
But this should be able to do everything since it's Linux.
Oh yeah, big time. So I mean, it's like, you know, you spend $800 or you spend $80, you know, just depending on what you want to do.
Yeah.
And he even used like a desktop form factor, so he can like have it on its side and then throw it up, you know, up under his television. So
it's not like a mini tower.
Right. He also did some other stuff too. He configured some BitTorrent stuff so that everybody on his network can, you know, through the web browser, configure, you know, their torrent client so that they can, you know, manage all their downloads and stuff like that. So that was pretty sweet.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, definitely. If, you know, another good use for an old computer, you know, a lot of folks used to do turn them into firewalls or routers. But, you know, I mean, storage is becoming huge. We have lots of folks doing home video now, or, you know, they're storing lots of audio or just whatever. So, you know, you're running out of space, you got an old computer laying around, and, you know, this is a good thing to do with it.
Well, it's you know, this would be perfect for like a small business who doesn't have a lot of extra money for tech. You know, in general, small business, they're more worried about selling their product and turning a profit. So tech kind of gets pushed to the back burner. I used to work for a company like that. And something like this would be perfect where people can access it from home and they can you can get to it pretty much from anywhere and you can share files, share media. It's a good use for it, I think.
Yeah, I think TorrentFlux, is the other thing you put on there. And TorrentFlux is pretty sweet because, you know, it's a web browser-based thing. You can have multiple users log in and start torrents, manage torrents. So that's kind of nice if you,
mm-hmm.
you know, if you configure it so that it doesn't suck down all your bandwidth, then you could have, you know, pretty much one workstation managing all that for you for, you know, multiple people.
Did he install any sort of web interface or was this all command line?
He has OpenSSH as his main way to get into it.
Okay, but, so probably command line.
Yeah, but like I think his Samba shares and everything he can do via SWAT, which is, you know, the Samba configuration utility that's based mm-hmm. on the web browser. So, I mean, that definitely speeds things up versus editing just the config files.
So something maybe that would be a good addition if you're not a command line junkie, maybe add a webmin install to this.
Oh, yeah,
give
definitely.
You a nice graphical interface. I mean, it's not the greatest thing out there, but that way, if say you're doing this at a business, you know, your boss wants to get in there and add a share or, you know, something like that.
Right. And I guess I was thinking more of it for home, but definitely at, you know, in the business, you know, you're always going to have old computers, you know, that you you know, question like, do I need this? What should I do with it? So
yeah, definitely for home, you know, get in there, dig into the command line. It's going to help you out in the future. So I would avoid the GUI at home if I were doing this, I think.
Yeah. Oh, for backups too, you know, I mean, a lot of people aren't doing any backups at home.
Right.
So this would be, you know, a good solution for that also.
Yeah.
So back up your iTunes. Don't lose it.
Yeah, speaking of backups, I need to maybe do this.
I think that's most of our quick stories for the week. This is, as I mentioned, the week of Thanksgiving. And Joe, what would you say you are thankful for?
So the thing I would say I'm thankful for this year is Mac OS X. Now, I would not say that I am an Apple enthusiast, a Mac head. though I'm slowly becoming one. This was my first year to own a Mac. When they switched to Intel, I picked up one of the laptops, and I have to say I fell in love with OS X very quickly. I'd fiddled around with it a little bit before, but it's really just a powerful app, powerful OS, and its roots in BSD makes it very nice to use from the command line. I can go in and edit permissions and do all kinds of nice things, install X11, and run actual X11 apps. So it's funny to see something like XClock running on OS X, and yet it's nice because OS X is beautiful and powerful all at the same time. So that's what I'm thankful for. How about you, Ryan?
Okay, thankful. I would say this year I have been very thankful for Ubuntu Linux.
Ooh.
Yes. Not that I have that many hours behind it, because, you know, Linux, we use a different distro at work, and I do have my laptop, my older laptop, dual booted for Ubuntu, but I'm thankful that it's such a popular distro that more and more people are getting into Linux, which I think is good. So I'm very thankful for that. And I'm also thankful for Casino Royale, which I saw last night, which was pretty cool.
Nice. Yeah, I would agree with you on Ubuntu. A friend of mine just installed it, and he had no previous Linux knowledge in any way, shape, or form. So it seems to be drawing people in with its ease of use, yet still has the power behind it.
Right. If only they just weren't so brown.
I love the brown, man.
The brown is pretty cool, I guess.
Of course, I'm wearing almost all brown right now, so.
Yeah, you should have got a brown Zune.
Ah, poo box.
Yes, okay. So to carry on with that theme, we wanted to talk a little bit this week about how people who are techies can survive the holidays. You know, we're here at the holidays. Thanksgiving is this weekend. A lot of folks are going to travel. We're all going to be, you know, out of our element, and we're going to have to deal with in-laws and family and people that we haven't seen before. Most of us are going to be away from home, which means we're going to be away from our home high-speed networks and, you know, all the things that, you know, we love and whatever. So, you know, we wanted to talk, you know, briefly about, you know, some of the things that can help you smooth over this holiday traumatic time. And I guess to start off with, you know, we want to, you know, remind you that, you know, if you are a techie, if you are an IT support, when you go home, you're going to, you know, be asked, you know, the questions, you know, like, hey, I got a virus, or, you know, how come my internets don't work? And, you know, I deleted my browser, and, you know, just all kinds of junk like that. So be ready for that. Just, you know, just steel yourself, pretty much take tools with you if you need to, like, you know, patches or antivirus, you know, throw, AV, you know, the free antivirus stuff on a disk and take it with you if you think you're going to need it. So, you know, just don't get surprised. The other thing is, if you're visiting family that's got computers, while you're there, do yourself a favor, and when you're going to bed, log onto their computer and start their updates, start their antivirus, start their defrags, do all the junk that they don't do all year long, you know, the stuff that you did last Thanksgiving while you were there.
Right.
Anything that could help prevent them from having to call you, you know, in 2 or 3 months, you know, while you're away and you can't get to their computer, definitely take a look at that. The other things were, I'll tell you one thing that helped me a lot was my parents, they live about 4 or 5 hours from me. So, they, not to say they live in the boonies, but they weren't in like a major metropolitan area. They finally got, I convinced them to get cable modem, and oddly enough, they had some pretty fast ones available where they were.
Really?
So my parents broke down, and I kind of made them feel guilty that, you know, hey, you know, when I come up here twice or, you know, 2 or 3 times a year, you know, it takes like the whole weekend to try to download, you know, these patches for Windows over the dial-up, you know, and it was just really horrible. So they broke down and got a cable modem, and it was waiting for me when I got there, and so that was a huge bonus. So set that up, and then, you know, one Christmas I pretty much built them a new computer, you know, and threw a nice graphics card in there. And basically what that means is now when I go home, I don't feel like I have to take my computer so that I can, you know, game or surf or whatever, because I know when I get there, there's already going to be a nice computer waiting for me.
Right.
Which is nice because, I mean, you want to travel a lot. You don't want to deal with all this stuff. So that's the thing. So you can always be like, hey, I got you this new graphics card, you know, for your computer. Oh, thanks. That's a great Christmas gift. It's like, well, okay, I want to install it, and then I'm going to test it out by playing World of Warcraft online.
And see you in 3 days.
That's right. So, you know, that's a good way. I mean, you kill several birds with one stone. You know, you don't have to take a computer, use it as a gift for them, but, you know, it's going to be there for you when you go to visit. So, you know, that's a main thing.
Yeah, and kind of along those lines, you know, a lot of my, you know, my email is online now, and a lot of my utilities are online-based, but there's still a few things, you know, that I need to bring with me that, you know, I have configured exactly the way I want. But I, you know, you're right. I don't want to have to bring a computer every time I go somewhere. Carrying it to the airport, and you get it scanned. You know, are they going to drop it? And you just never know what's going to happen. So one thing I found useful is portableapps.com. They have portable versions of several. A lot of them are open source, which is always a good thing. Mm. Actually, I think they probably all are open source. But either way, you can get portable Firefox, portable FileZilla for FTP. And, you know, get it configured exactly how you want. So throw it on the thumb drive, throw that thumb drive in the computer, and you can run your apps configured how you want, totally separate from your parents' machine, your neighbor's machine, whoever you're visiting. And, you know, they don't see where you've been going, and you're not going to affect their machine in any way. You're not going to be installing apps that they don't need,
right?
Which is nice. You know, then you kind of have your own user experience. And until we can get to a point where we can actually boot an OS easily off that thumb drive, which you could go that route and bring like a bootable live CD, but then it's still not totally configured the way you want.
Right.
But it's a nice little thing that I've done several times.
Right. Yeah. Another thing is be sure to, you know, if, you know, throw your favorite DVDs and magazines in a bag.
Definitely.
You know, so when you go, you know, after dinner, and I mean, unless you want to spend 24/7 talking to your family, which I don't know many people that want to do that. You know, you want to take some movies and stuff with you,
right,
so that, you know, you can have your own entertainment there.
Yeah, save up those podcasts, you know, go listen to old episodes of Angry Admins, you know, got to plug that.
Right. Especially the really old ones from like 3 weeks ago.
Right. You know, those ancient ones, episode one, which nobody should ever listen to. So episode 2 and 3 is pretty much all there is,
right,
I would say. But yeah, you know, that's kind of what I do is if I see a holiday coming up and I know I'm going to be traveling, I kind of stop listening to podcasts for a little while. So I've got several hours to, you know, when I'm in the airport with nothing to do, I can, you know, spin up my iPod, or if you have a Creative Play or your Zune, whatever it is that you play back your podcasts on, things like that, you know, just kind of plan ahead just a little bit, and it can save you a lot of boredom.
Right. And I tell you what, I did that last year. It made such a huge difference.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, the year before, I'm in the car for 5 hours. I'm driving through Central Texas. There's nothing but these little towns, you know, and I mean, the radio station's cutting in and out and they're playing stuff from the 80s. You know, it's like, there's only so much Def Leppard I can listen to.
Right.
So, I mean, what I did is, it's like you said, I just kind of, you know, took a break from podcast like the week before, and then I went out and I looked actively, you know, for stuff that I was interested in, new
mm-hmm.
podcasts that I wanted to try out. You know, I dumped them all onto, at the time, MP3 CDs, and then, you know, threw them in my car, and wow, I mean, it just made such a huge difference because I had like
sure.
10 hours of content, so I didn't have to rely on the radio, you know, to be entertained. So it made a huge difference, I think.
One other story kind of related to this is if you are traveling through an airport, you might want to check out this wiki on smallbusiness.com. We'll provide a link in the show notes, but basically they have a list of all the free Wi-Fi in airports across the United States. They have quite a few states listed. Looks like there are 39 states, and you know, most of these aren't your big international airports because those are going to charge because they know you're going to go there. But, you know, if you live kind of out in the middle of nowhere, your family does, and you're going through a small airport, check this list, and you may be able to get some free Wi-Fi while you're out there. So then you can know whether or not you want to, you know, carry on your laptop or just go ahead and check it.
Yeah.
So that's one thing to check ahead of time.
Did you travel with your laptop here recently?
Yeah, I did. And, you know, it's... I have to say that the airport Wi-Fi, I paid one time because I had like a 3-hour layover. It was like $5. It was kind of slow.
Mm.
You know, I wasn't that happy with it. So I think in general, really, you should just try to bring your content ahead of time. But if you find yourself stuck, you know, maybe it is worth it.
Yeah.
Especially if, my parents, they have high speed, but my in-laws, they live out in the middle of nowhere, really. And, you know, all they have is antenna channels, so they don't have cable, they don't have satellite. and their dial-up is at 28.8. That's right.
Wow.
So, you know, if I want anything, I've got to bring it ahead of time or I'm stuck reading Reader's Digest all weekend long.
Wow.
So if I forget and I'm at the airport, it's probably worth spending. But traveling with a laptop is kind of a pain, I think.
That's cool. You must feel like those Star Trek guys that, like, went back to Earth, you know, and then, like, no one knew how to do anything. So
right.
You're like Mr. Technology and everyone else is like...
Yeah, it's, you know, we've been slowly trying to get them upgraded. We've got their PC upgraded a little bit. But it's, I think they might be getting DirecTV or Dish Network soon, but
wow.
They're going to have to like drill a hole through all the trees in their yard because they have no view of the sky.
Okay. So how was security with your laptop? Was it, did you have to boot it and show it to them?
You know, actually, it wasn't too bad. So like I traveled on business, and brought one of the work laptops and like the only... I had to take you have to take your laptop out of the bag.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a laptop bag, you have to take it out and put it in a separate bin, and they just run it through the scanner. But they didn't really take it up. They didn't make me boot it, which is surprising.
Wow.
But and then I brought my laptop once, and they didn't really say a whole lot. I mean, but you do have to take it out. It gets bounced around a lot. So I go back and forth on whether or not I really just want to check it.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, checking it, I mean, you watch those guys out the window and they're tossing it 3 feet.
Right. See, I thought you always had to boot them and show it to them.
I think they're supposed to do that, but, yeah. You know, these guys.
You know. You know what I saw? It was so awesome. There was this thing that I saw about a month or two ago. So it's basically made for this. So you throw this little thing on your laptop, and it's like this red screen with these Arabic characters, and then it beeps like once a second, and then it has like a timer like ticking down like it's a bomb. That's so sweet.
That's a good way to get yourself thrown in jail.
Yeah, it's like how do you like that cavity search?
Nice. Yeah.
But
it's airports awesome. Are, you know, they're just always a problem to deal with. But it is, the other funny thing is, you know, you walk around the airport, and you know these airports were designed 20 years ago. Most of them, they're not that new, so. Plug-in is limited, and if it's a layover, you always see these congregations of tech guys just kind of sitting around these power. You can always find the power source because there's three or four people sitting around with their laptops or iPods or cell phones plugged in, and you have to, like, fight them off to get your plug because, you know, there's only two outlets per, like, square mile in an airport.
Like wolves around a dead deer.
Yeah, it's pretty rough.
Man. Okay, continuing our weekly segment of Site of the Week. This week we have IPaddress.com.
A weekly segment of 2 weeks.
Well, yeah, but I mean, every journey starts with a single step.
That's right, and we're on step two.
That's right. So yeah, IPaddress.com, you know, like the most creative name ever. But it's IP-address, but with 1D.com, so... Because there's no way that you'll remember that. It'll be in the show notes.
All right.
And in spite of the annoying name, it is pretty sweet because you go to the site, and the first thing it does is it shows you where you are on Google Map. So that's kind of nice. And so far, it's been pretty much right on, the ones we've tried. The nice thing is you can throw any IP in there, and it will give you, like, the country of origin, the city, the lat long. That's pretty sweet. So if you want to, you know, call in an airstrike, I mean, there you go. So track that spam and start dropping the bombs. I just said bombs on a podcast. That means that the NSA.
And you talked about an Arabic counter that flashes red. You are going to get pulled aside.
So what was that thing, Carnivore? The thing that, like, scans all the internet traffic and alerts the NSA?
Maybe they haven't figured out how to scan audio yet.
Oh, okay. But, yeah, it gives you the ISP and the organization. So you can just throw any IP in there, and it'll give you,
nice.
You know, all the nice stuff. So the other thing is they have a link that will take you to the satellite picture, which that's kind of interesting also. But, yeah, that's it. Site of the Week, ip-address.com with 1D.
So if you got a hacker and you want to see what his house looks like, there you go.
That's right, man. Okay, I think that's going to about do it for us this week. We will be back next week on Tuesday, right after Thanksgiving, for our regularly scheduled show. Feel free to look for us on iTunes or at angryadmins.com. Joe's been doing a great job on the website and all the archives, and we also have links for direct download to just grab the MP3s off the site. Until then, I am Ryan Necessary.
And I'm Joe Bibby.
And we'll see you guys next time.